Good morning. My name is Brenda, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to Vesta's first quarter 2017 earnings conference call. Vesta issued its quarterly report on Thursday, April 27, 2017. If you did not receive a copy via email, please do not hesitate to contact the company at +52 55 59 50 0070. Before we begin the call today, I would like to remind you that forward-looking statements made during today's conference call do not account for future economic circumstances, industry conditions, company performance, and financial results. These statements are subject to a number of certain risks and uncertainties. All figures included herein were prepared in accordance with IFRS and are stated in nominal U.S. dollars unless otherwise noted. Joining us today from Vesta in Mexico City is Lorenzo Berho, the Chief Operating Officer, Juan Sotil, the CFO, and Fernando Bettinger, Investor Relations Officer. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Berho. Sir, please begin.
Thank you, Operator, and good morning, everybody. Thank you for your interest in Vesta and for participating in today's conference call. Our CEO, Lorenzo Berho, was forced to travel unexpectedly, so I very much appreciate the opportunity to review Vesta's operational results with you this quarter. We are proud to report a strong start to the year, with robust leasing activity affirming global demand for high-quality industrial space in Mexico. For the first quarter, we achieved excellent operating and financial performance, evidence of our ability to remain adaptable and innovative through the changing macroeconomic backdrop. Clients from Europe, Asia, US, and Mexico are establishing their manufacturing bases with an eye to the long term, driving demand for Vesta's best-in-class industrial facilities. We have been experiencing strong deal rhythm since last year. Our overall leasing activity was 2.5 million square feet for the first quarter, as Vesta signed new leases totaling over 540,000 square feet with existing tenants and new companies, and renewed 2 million square feet of its portfolio. I would like to highlight that Nestle, our largest client, has renewed their three leases for another 7 years. This means that our 10 largest clients, or 34% of our GLA, will not mature before 2023. Our lower vacancy rate also reflects solid demand. A 200 basis point fall to 10.9% in first quarter 2017 from 12.5% a year ago. New tenants that signed leases during the quarter include Carcoustic, a German light manufacturing company that produces auto components, Unitech Foam, a South Korean packaging company, Toyota Tsusho, a world-class Japanese auto company, among others. Requests for proposals are a strong proxy for demand, and average 27 per month through 2016. Requests for proposals have shown an upward trend this year at 29 in January, 34 in February, 30 in March, and 32 so far in April. These factors mean we maintain a substantial and diverse pipeline, equivalent to 1 year's worth of development, which has reinforced our confidence to keep investing for profitable growth. Vesta is developing 1.27 million square feet in build-to-suit and inventory buildings in key markets, and our investment committee has approved investments totaling 22.4 million. These include 8.8 million for the construction of Pacifico inventory building in Tijuana, 7.3 million for an inventory building in Juarez, and 6.3 million for an inventory building in Puebla. In terms of key financial metrics, revenues rose 22%, while EBITDA was almost 23% higher for the period. Funds from operation totaled 9.5 million from 10.82 million in first quarter 2016. This was mainly due to the rising current tax from an exchange-related effect, as the peso strengthened during the first quarter. An adjusted FFO without the tax impact would have been 13.7 million. While the future of NAFTA remains uncertain, on Wednesday, President Trump spoke with Mexico's President Enrique Peña Nieto and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau of Canada to discuss the North American Free Trade Agreement and agreed to renegotiate NAFTA rather than terminate U.S. participation, as Mr. Trump described, to make all three countries stronger and better. It is also important to note that in the auto sector, Mexico underpins North America's competitive position. As the number one supplier of auto parts in the U.S., to the U.S., Mexico offers parts produced by a highly skilled and efficient workforce. Since auto parts comprise two-thirds of vehicles' cost, this relationship is crucial in ensuring the U.S. auto industry remains globally competitive. More broadly, at least 5 million U.S. jobs depend on Mexican exports, while the country rose 6 positions in ranking in the 2016 to 2017 World Economic Forum Global Competitiveness Report. As we look to the future, we remain cautiously optimistic that Mexico will continue to strengthen its position as a competitive global manufacturing hub. As the country's premier supplier of high-quality industrial facilities, Vesta remains uniquely positioned to take advantage of a dynamic where demand continues to outstrip supply. In addition, the long-term nature of our global client relationships, our exposure to high-growth markets, and deeper sector expertise means we remain committed to delivering profitable growth as we execute on our Vesta Vision 2020 strategic plan. Before I pass the call to our CFO, Juan Sotil, for a more detailed discussion of our first quarter results, I wanted to comment that I look forward to meeting many of you in person at Vesta's Investor Day in New York on June 14, where we'll be discussing our operations and strategy in a greater detail. With that, Juan, please go ahead.
Thank you, Lorenzo. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. This quarter, our robust leasing activity and our low vacancy rate were evidence of sustained demand for our high-quality industrial facilities. This was further reflected in Vesta's strong operational results, where we achieved double-digit growth in revenues, EBITDA, and 50 basis points increase in EBITDA margin. These factors, supported by a healthy pipeline, have given our investment committee the confidence to approve investments totally $22.4 million in Tijuana, Juarez, and Puebla to ensure that we can appropriately address expected demand in the period ahead. For the first quarter, Vesta's portfolio grew 23.9 million square feet, while occupancy trends were broadly stable on a same-store and an stabilized basis. The vacancy rate fell to 10.9% from 12.5% a year earlier, as we signed leases totaling more than 540,500 square feet for facilities for clients from Germany, Japan, and Korea. Regarding key financial metrics, revenue grew 22% to over $25 million. As for the first quarter, Vesta has already renewed 70% of the leases due to expire in 2017, and we have 1.3 million square feet in buildings under construction. We expect these projects to contribute around 5.8 million to revenue once they are stabilized. First quarter operating costs as a share of rental income were flat on a year-on-year basis. Net operating rose 21.3% to 24.8 million as demand for our properties outstripped costs. NOI margin was 50 basis points lower to 96.4%. EBITDA was 22.8% higher to $22 million from $17.8 million, and EBITDA margins reached 85.5%. Total comprehensive income for the first quarter of 2017 was $78.51 million versus $8.3 million increase in the first quarter of 2016. This was mainly due to a gain linked to the revaluation of investment property. Funds from operations were lower at $9.5 million, a fall mainly attributable to higher taxes, due to the effect of the exchange rate on the debt portfolio from a fiscal point of view. As the peso strengthened, as mentioned, adjusted FFO, excluding this one-time gain, was $13.7 million. Turning to our balance sheet, cash and cash equivalents were $25.4 million. Operating activity generated net cash flow of $12.6 million. Investment activities were focused on construction-related payments associated with progress on buildings in Bajío, Ciudad Juárez, and Puebla. Total investments were $22.9 million for the quarter. As the second quarter closed, we had an overall debt balance of $376 million, all of which is related to long-term facilities. Vesta's debt remains denominated in dollars, and we can comfortably address any upcoming maturities. As I have commented, we have a robust pipeline to support our strategic Vesta Vision 2020 growth plan as Mexico leading industrial real estate developers. And we are confident that we will continue to deliver profitable growth for all stakeholders. Thank you, and I will now open the floor for your questions.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate that your line is in the question queue, and you may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Once again, that is star 1 to ask a question at this time. Our first question comes from the line of Eugenio Saldana with GBM. Please go ahead with your questions.
Hi, Lorenzo, Juan. Good morning. Congrats on your results. I have two questions. The first one is regarding, I mean, if you could comment further on the conditions that you renew the Nestle leases, I mean, in terms of pricing and lease spreads and all that stuff, please. The second one is regarding if you can share with us, perhaps after the closing of the quarter, have you signed any build to suit? I mean, as I see in the pipeline, you have just one build to suit left, which is in Aguascalientes, correct? But do you have any other building build to suit to develop? Thank you very much, and congrats again.
Hola, Eugenio, and thank you very much for participating in the call. We anticipated the renewal for Nestle. As you remember, Nestle and CPW, which is a serial joint venture between General Mills and Nestle, they were both expiring in 2018 and 2019, respectively. What we did was an early renewal, which extended the leases for 7 years and 8 years for the two buildings, which was, we believe, a very, very good deal for both of us. We still believe that having long-term leases is important for our portfolio and our maturity profile. So the net effect was to, as you know, Nestle has been with us for over 15 years. So the leases had escalated according to inflation, and they will still be inflating according to inflation. So we did a rent reduction for this year so that they could reduce the rent to market rents to market conditions. And from now on, they will keep on adjusting to inflation for the every month, because this is in the conditions remain in UDIs, and you know that UDIs are it's an inflated currency of the Mexican peso. In the end, I think that this really reinforces our strategy of keep on growing with our client and keep on extending their maturities with them and keep on renewing in advance when possible. Secondly, regarding your question on build-to-suits, as you very well know, the build-to-suit negotiations take longer than inventory buildings. Normally, a negotiation for a build-to-suit takes between 6 months and 12 months. So, yes, let me tell you that we have a couple or several build-to-suits under negotiation right now. But, of course, even if we have letter of intents or even if we're in the negotiating process, we only report when we start construction of build-to-suits once we sign the lease agreement. So, hopefully, in the next month, we will be announcing more build-to-suit projects. Demand is very strong. still. And clients, as I mentioned earlier, we have several clients who are interested in growing, and either clients or new potential clients. Our pipeline is very strong. So in the end, we believe we're very confident that the pace of growth that we had last year will probably remain the same for this year and will get us to achieve our Vesta Vision 2020 strategy.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Gracias.
Thank you. Our next questions come from the line of Farlan Mendez with JP Morgan. Please go ahead with your questions.
Hello, guys. Thank you for the call. Regarding the new inventory buildings that you started or that you were approved, when did you start construction on these? Because I saw that the progress was 0% at the end of the quarter. Are you still being a little bit cautious on the pace of the additions to the development pipeline, or are you all set and as confident as before the Donald Trump's election?
Gracias. Yeah, thank you very much for being on the call, Farlan. Let me tell you how the process works. Normally, we go to the investment committee, we get approval, and from there on, we start construction of the buildings. We had an investment committee early this month, and that's where we analyzed the market trends. We went specifically for each of the markets where we are proposing new inventory buildings. We saw that the dynamic is very strong. There's very limited supply in these particular markets. We're very active in leasing for these markets, and that's when we decided to go ahead and start construction for these three buildings. Construction will start this month, as we recently were approved. But the important thing is that we want to have the buildings as soon as possible being built, because we know that the market dynamics are solid. And we want to be able to anticipate to market demands, and therefore construction is important to be started in the next. I would say in the next weeks. And for example, let me use only one example in Tijuana, which is a market where we are. I could say that almost 100% leased. It's a market where vacancy rate totaling in the market in Tijuana is close to 2%. So there's pretty much no availability of Class A industrial space in the market. Therefore, it's for us very important to start construction soon so that we can really get clients the space they require for the at least to have it for the end of the year, fourth quarter 2017.
Great. If I may have another question. Could we expect at some time you to shift a little bit your geographical footprint and be more focused into the central part of the city, et cetera, to let's say reduce the seasonality on the all the manufacturing trends or the volatility that we see in this current environment going forward?
That's a very good question, and part of our strategy is always to analyze market dynamics. We believe we have a strong market intelligence. Internally, we have a department who is dedicated towards that. And definitely, we analyze the trends in different industries, but we also analyze the strength of the lease agreements and the type of quality of tenants we want to achieve. Even considering the currency of the type of currency that the leases are signed. And let me tell you, there are certain markets in which we are still confident that demand is going to be strong. These are still in the Bajío markets, still in the north part of Mexico, as I just mentioned, Tijuana. And in central Mexico, let me tell you, for example, Toluca is a very, very strong market where we are tapping demand for logistics and for local consumption. In this market, we are almost also 100% leased, as you can see in our reports. Actually, let me tell you that there's only one available building in the market over 200,000 square feet, and that's our building. So there's very limited supply. We have a nice quality product nice quality building. And now we are to decide what type of clients we want to get in this type of building. So anyways, I think that we're always analyzing different markets, and I believe we have a very strong presence towards domestic consumption still in certain markets.
Thank you. And lastly, could we say that we have reached a price level of the stock where you feel more comfortable going forward with expansions or building inventories rather than having buybacks?
Well, I think these are two different things. I think that when first of all, we analyze the market, the real estate market, and wherever we see strong demand and limited supply, we're going to keep on doing deals at very accretive deals like we have been doing in the past. And also, if the purchase price or the buyback program is at a fair price, we are going to keep on buying. So we always do this comparison. It's not that we do either one or the other. We analyze both, and if we want to tap both, we will be doing so.
Have you canceled any of the shares that you already bought back?
Fräulein, this is Juan Sotil, the CFO. Basically, we have purchased around 3.5% of the company. No, we don't have any intention of canceling the shares. The companies, public companies in Mexico have the latitude of keeping the shares indefinitely. Right now, we believe that it's better for us to have the optionality of the shares by keeping them alive. We believe that as we grow, it is in the best interest of our shareholders eventually in the years to come, that if we need more capital, we can sell back the shares. We don't see the keeping of the shares as a short-term opportunity. We see the keeping of the shares as a way of buying back the company. We make very judicious decisions in terms of the return that we could have on our shares. But in 2020-2021, we need capital for the last push of growth in the Vesta Vision 2020 plan. Those shares give us the opportunity to continue that growth without diluting the shareholders more than what they approve on the last dilution.
Great. Very clear. Thank you very much, and congrats again.
Thank you very much.
Our next questions come from the line of Vanessa Quiroga with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead with your questions.
Hi. Thank you. Good morning, and congratulations for the operating results. My question is about the FFO explanation that you provided on the press release. Can you explain with a little bit more detail what could be done to avoid this effect in taxes from FX? Does it have to do with that type of lending that you have? Could it be different? Thank you.
Let me go first on the FFO, and then you ask me, Vane. Good morning, and thank you for participating. You repeat me the second part of the question, which I didn't quite get. But let's go first to the FFO. Let's start by saying that in Vesta, we're very efficient vehicles on the tax front. Let me tell you what I mean by that, because I think it's important. If you look at our current taxes over the last, let's say, the last 3 years on my annual financials, you will see that current taxes as a percentage of FFO or as a percentage of sales, just to get rid of all the non-cash items that are sitting on my income statement, they basically have averaged over the last 3 years. Pues hombre, as a percent of sales, less than 5%. As a percent of earning before taxes, cleaning out the non-cash items, pues hombre, around 6%, somewhere in that region. So indeed, Vesta is a vehicle that we pay all taxes, but because of our depreciation for tax purposes, we're a very tax-efficient vehicle. Having said that, The tax accounting, that the tax rules that the Mexican authorities dictate, imply that my bookkeeping for tax purposes is in pesos. And for those purposes, and those purposes only, I have a peso company that has a substantial dollar debt. Therefore, how does it work? At the end of the day, from a tax perspective, my end of the year foreign exchange rate, let's say it was around 20 pesos per dollar, and my end of the quarter foreign exchange rate, end of the quarter foreign exchange rate, let's say it was about 18 pesos per dollar. So actually, the peso revaluated 2 pesos. From a tax point of view, the rules are very simple. My debt shrink in peso terms. I have a sizable earnings because of the mark to market of my debt. The tax authorities do not mind if that is a non cash event. They say you have a gain, therefore pay me the taxes. So how much was the gain? Let's say that the debt of Vesta is $350 million, just for easy number crunching. Over the envelope, so 2 pesos over $350 million, that's $700 million dollars of taxable gains. Let's say that my statutory tax rate is 30%. Well, that's 700 times 20%, that's $210 million of taxes, which in dollars at 18%, roughly speaking, at 20 pesos is around $11 million. Then we apply our tax efficiency, tax loss carry forwards, what have you, and then we come out to the $9 million figure of taxes. This is very over the envelope, but that I just wanted to give you the gist of the concept. Okay.
Yes. Okay. No, that helps Juan. You will have to pay these taxes by the end of the year, correct?
If everything
That's
remains the same, yeah. If everything remains the same, at the end of the year, I will have a tax bill that, because of the debt effect, let's say, I will have to pay this tax bill. My best estimate right now of the end of the year tax rate is this amount. Now, bear in mind the following, and please let's not forget that. The calculation I just made, very over the envelope, I just wanted to explain the concept. It's a point-to-point calculation. That is, if the exchange rate had moved to 18 pesos in December 31st, 2017, it would have been the same calculation. Because we're showing the books at the first quarter, the calculation for the tax related on the shrinking on the increase in value of the debt was just for 3 months. However, my income, expenses, everything, which is on an accrual basis, have only have 3 months for of time accumulation. So I just want to make sure that nobody calculates and assumes that the tax, that the effective tax rate of Vesta is whatever comes out of dividing this quarter taxable current taxes over whatever statistic you want to do and say, Vesta pays a lot of taxes. Because that calculation is biased because of the accrual of only 3 months of revenues, cost, and what have you.
Great, Juan. And when you provide the adjusted number, FFO of $13.7 million, if I'm not mistaken, what adjustment are you making? Are you assuming that there was no increase in the value of the debt in peso terms?
Well, no. I mean, well, and I guess that would have required better explanation. But in any case, the point that we want to make is, look, Investa, we care. We focus our management efforts in growth to achieve consistent growth in FFO per share. Everything that we do has to be looked. We look at it. The management looks at it. Our investment committee and our board look at it as providing increases in FFO per share. That's the only metric that matters in our mind, FFO per share. So in that respect, what we wanted to say is, in terms of FFO per share, except for the extraordinary item, we had an extraordinary quarter. And we want to realize that. We want you to realize that. Now, taxes will be paid when due in form. So what we just wanted to underline is the strong growth in FFO per share. And I wanted to complement that, you gave me the opportunity to complement that concept by saying, look, if you look at the tax accounting of Vesta over the longer term, 3 years average, we pay a very low tax base. We have a very low tax base. And that is very convenient for shareholders. And so don't be scared or don't be worried about the 1 point spike in taxes because the peso appreciated on this particular quarter. That was the only point of doing the pro forma analysis.
Okay, very well. Thank you, Juan. Thank you, Lorenzo.
Thank you. Our next question will come from the line of Cecilia Jimenez of Santander. Please go ahead with your questions.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. It's actually a question on the development side. You currently have roughly 54 million undergoing investments on the pipeline. But considering the strong activity we have seen this quarter and the previous, and the fact that the vacancy you have today is very low, do you think it's possible we could see a potential, I don't know, 100 million investment this year, like we did in previous years? I mean, could it be this a normal year of investments in terms of GLA growth? Thanks.
Hola, Cecilia. This is Lorenzo again. Thank you very much for being on the call. Yes, currently, as you described, our development pipeline is targeting $53 million of investment. And as you know, this is somewhat dynamic because we are very close to the markets and we are very close to analyzing wherever we want to have starts of buildings. And this depends also on how strong we are in terms of leasing activity, since we would like to maintain the same occupancy levels as we have in every single market. And as long as we maintain the same level of occupancy or in the occupancy area, we will keep on starting development of new projects. We currently see strong demand, so we definitely see that our development pipeline will continue to be as strong as it was probably even last year. We actually have not seen any dip in the or any reduction in the momentum that we had even last year. And currently, I think that it's having an investment of $50 million on the first quarter of the year is a fantastic sign that the year might come pretty well. So in the next quarters, I believe that we're going to have more starts. It could be other inventory buildings. It could be another build-to-suit project. It really depends on the markets and how the dynamics are. But we definitely see a strong demand for in looking into the future.
Perfect. That's very clear. Thanks, Lauren. I have another question on the tax side, a follow-up on Vanessa's question. Should we expect this impact to continue under a scenario when the business is strengthening through the year? The impact on the
taxes, Ceci, thank you for the question. Well, yes, as I explained, this is a matter of how taxes work in Mexico, no? The tax authorities are keen on collecting taxes on any taxable gain, and they have defined that mark-to-market, quote-unquote, of your debt liabilities because of peso appreciation is a taxable event, regardless of the fact that it is not a cash flow event. So if the peso continues to strengthen, Yes, we will see this impact. Now, all Mexican companies that have dollar liabilities have this kind of impact. Again, I believe that Vesta as a vehicle is a very efficient tax vehicle, has a very efficient tax structure. Our effective rate, as I pointed out, is substantially low. So with the peso strengthens, yeah, we have that exposure, and then our taxes will go from the numbers that I told you to numbers of around, I mean, even if tax, if the taxes on go to, let's say, 10% of earnings before tax adjusted by non-cash flow events, I still believe that we have a very efficient tax, a very efficient vehicle from a tax point of view. So we're certainly not worried. It is a function of exchange rate, but so it is for most Mexican companies, and we all take advantage or of that.
Yep, thank you. Thanks for that one. A final one, if I may, with the recent deliveries in GLA, what is your outstanding average age of the portfolio? I believe that has decreased. So if you
lo tenemos ese. Say-
Well, let me. I will give you the exact number. Give me just a couple seconds. But let me tell you what we've been doing. And since we went public, this was 2012. We started with 11 million square feet. Currently, we are by 25 million, considering what we are currently developing. So as you can see, most of the projects or most of the buildings we have been built in the last 5 years. So this really puts our portfolio age in a great situation. This is clearly the most modern portfolio in Mexico because of the age of the brand new buildings, which is Class A, new generation facilities with high quality standards. And let me tell you, I think that it could be roughly 7 years, which is fantastic on the whole portfolio, which is fantastic given the fact that CapEx for maintenance for these type of buildings, tilt-up walls with concrete floors and concrete instead of asphalt in many of the maneuvering yards and the access roads, this really maintains very low our CapEx for maintenance of these type of buildings, which are long-lasting. And also, these are institutional class real estate, so that any institutional class investor would be very comfortable at owning these type of buildings, as most of our investors are right now. So this is something we really care about, and we like to maintain it as modern as possible, our portfolio.
Thanks, Loren.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next questions come from the line of Alan Macias with Bank of America. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for the call. Just if you can provide us with an update on your dividend policy or what we can expect for dividend payout for next year. Thank you.
Alan, so nice to see you again. Thank you for the question. Dividend policy is something that we care a lot. One of the important reasons that we did not become a FIBRA when we decided to make our company public was to have a flexible dividend policy. We believe that the value of retained earnings for our shareholder base is enormous. As long as we continue to grow accretively, and that's why I underline the fact that we measure ourselves in our ability to create a growing trend of FFO per share, investors, I believe, will feel very comfortable in us retaining a certain amount of earnings, and therefore dividends is not the priority for Vesta. That's why we're not a FIBRA. We're looking for investors, and we should attract investors that consider high value-added creation and growth as the key metric, no? So in that line of thought, our dividend policy was defined as a percentage of the cash-generating capability of the company in a way as a function of FFO. within that flexibility, if we perceive that we should grow more slowly, we should hike dividend policy. And this is what we did on the first on this year. Based on the turbulence of the markets, based on the lack of clarity for the future that we all had after the Trump election, we decided that it was proper for the company to return money for the shareholders. We're just the stewards of your capital. So we hiked significantly the amount of dividends that we were paying to the market. Now, let's assume that we retake the Vesta Vision 2020, as we have done on this quarter. Then what I care about is growing the company as fast as possible, continuing to make the judicious decisions we have made in the past, and for that reason, with the objective of not diluting the shareholders in the future, I will adjust dividend policy. If that means going back to a 2% dividend yield as we were on the first couple of years of Vesta, we will be flexible enough to do that. So this decision will be taken with what type of information? How fast are we going to profitably grow the portfolio? How many opportunities there are in the regions that we operate? And if those opportunities are accretive, if they actually increase FFO per share, then dividends will adjust accordingly, and we will explain the adjustments as we have done in the past.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next questions come from the line of Andre Mazzini with Bradesco. Please go ahead with your questions.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for the call and the opportunity. My question is on investments going forward. So you mentioned previously $53 million in the investment pipeline, right? And I was wondering if the recently approved $22.4 million is included in the 53 or if that's on top of the 53. Thank you.
Hola, Andre. This is Lorenzo again. Yes, the $22 million are part of the $53 million, to answer straightforward your question. And this also includes land that actually we already own the land. So the additional investment on the $22 million is somewhat lower since the land, in terms of cash flow, because the land is already part of our balance sheet.
Well,
perfect. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And once again, as a reminder, you may press star 1 to ask a question at this time. Our next question comes from the line of Pablo Odernas with Itaú. Please go ahead with your questions.
Hi, Lorenzo Juan. Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. Regarding pricing dynamics, I was surprised to see that the Nestlé renewal implied a lower revenues due to the mark-to-market of the rentals when the Toluca market, as you mentioned, is almost 100% occupied. So can you give us any color regarding what to expect from prices looking ahead, given that in the past years, overall rental prices in Mexico have been flat? What should we expect going forward?
Absolutely. And let me tell you, Pablo, I think that in the end, the market has been responding very well in terms of conserving certain rents, maintaining certain rents. We have actually not seen strong reductions in the rents in the markets. Most of the markets, particularly the Bajío region and the north part of Mexico, they are holding in U.S. dollars. And let me tell you that even in certain markets, they have been increasing as supply is reduced. And in the case of the renewals, normally the renewals have sometimes they have different circumstances, particularly in this situation. It was three buildings in two different markets. So in the end, it's a combination of both. This is a very atypical negotiation that we had with Nestlé. It's a little bit different than any other project, but in the end, we believe that bringing back certain rents that have been inflated for too long, bringing them back to market, it's a fair adjustment for as long as we keep on extending the leases with strong tenants. And most importantly, very credit-worthy tenants as Nestle. And let me tell you now, taking the opportunity of talking about Nestle, let me tell you, I think Nestle is a fantastic company and is a typical type of global company that Vesta is really trying to partner with. Definitely, they are one of our largest clients, but it's the type of strategy that we want to keep and maintain as a real estate partner. So in the end, I think that this type of benefits are very good for our clients, but are definitely very, very good for our investors.
Yeah, understood. Very clear. Thanks, Lawrence.
Thank you. This concludes today's question and answer session. I would like to turn the floor back to Lorenzo Berho for closing comments.
Thank you all. We really appreciate having a very successful and very good first quarter results. Definitely, we would like to have you in our Investor Day in June 14 in New York. We'll be very glad to have you there. And we would like you also to invite you to visit our buildings and visit our industrial parks and to really have a sense of how the markets are moving. Our buildings, as mentioned, are very high-quality buildings. And I think that as long as demand is going to be strong, we're going to keep on developing. And hopefully you get the same sensitivity as we are. And we invite you to be close to our investors relation team with Fernanda Bettinger, with CFO Juan Sotil, or even with myself, so I can go deeper and on the analysis and talk to you a little bit of the markets and so. So thank you very much for participating, and see you soon.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and thank you for your participation.